Beyonce wrote a song once where she asked a question. She said, who runs the world? Who runs the world? Let's do that again, because I know more you got to know. Who runs the world? Who runs the world? All right. Okay. All right. Y'all made Beyonce happy. March is Women's History Month, and it's a time that we celebrate the accomplishments of women who were once girls. Women like the one in the gospel today. So when I think about celebrating women, I think about how every woman enters life as a little girl, shaped by the world around her. Today, or actually yesterday, we buried two women, one who was 39 years old, who struggled with anxiety, not feeling good enough most of her life, despite how her parents reminded her of how amazing she was. Everyone around her saw her beauty, her kindness, her capacity, her capability, her wisdom that she possessed, but her. It was hard for her to see what others saw in her. The second woman that we buried was 85 years old, a mother of one of our parishioners, who was robbed of her innocence to be a child. Her mother died when she was 5 years old, and she would become a caretaker, a maid, and a nanny at 9 years old in Peru. Both of these women were incubators for life, giving love and life to everyone that they encountered, human or animal. And we know that the world was better because they were in it. This week, I was asked to be on a panel led by Dr. Angela Sims at Colgate Divinity Seminary to talk about the importance of ministering to girls and helping them to be all that they could be. Realizing that how we treat our girls will determine how we are shaped as women in the world. See, Jesus knew the importance of investing in the lives of girls and women. The moderator shared on that panel some startling statistics about what girls have to navigate in the world that in some ways contradicts Beyoncé's song, Girls Rule the World, when she asked the question, who are we and what we run? On this panel, I learned about the Beijing Declaration. Who knows about the Beijing Declaration? Okay, good, then we're gonna learn together. In 1995, at the World Conference on Women in Beijing, it was the first of a blueprint identifying the need for addressing issues faced by adolescent girls all around the world. In fact, in 2011, the UN adopted October 11th as the International Day of the Girl Child. And on this day, internationally and annually, the world was being asked to recognize, empower, amplify the voices of girls, and to work to eliminate deep-rooted gender-based discrimination and bias. Out of 1.8 billion young people ages 10 to 24 years old in the world, of these, 600 million are adolescent girls and young women. Across the world, young women continue to experience gender-based discrimination, marginalization, violence that includes unequal access to education and opportunities to leadership and participation. But progressive societies understand something. They say that caring for girls in their youth benefits all of us. And the research tells us that if they are empowered at a vulnerable age, they can mature into liberated, wise women of the future. And so if empowered girls grow up to be empowered women, as a society, we all win. Perhaps that is why in this gospel today, Jesus understands the importance of having an encounter with this woman at the well in Samaria. While traditional theology would problematize her and tends to problematize her, I invite us to walk with her in her courage, in her faith. and her resilience as she encounters Jesus. And in him, a God of inclusion, a God of liberation, salvation, promise, and life. The journey of beginning her life as a girl, growing into womanhood, wasn't easy, I'm sure, as it isn't easy for most of us who grow up in the world as girls. But Jesus helps her to navigate her story and heal, ultimately, through this encounter that transforms an entire community. So let's join Jesus as he journeys with her. Jesus comes to a town of Samaria called Sychar. Now, the word Sychar means end. So perhaps right here at the very beginning, we get a glimpse of the fact that Jesus comes to impact the end of her story. Perhaps she thought her story was finished, as we sometimes do, when we think that we've hit the end and that then God comes in and God carves out a new way that seems like no way, or God writes a new story out of an old narrative that we thought we were stuck with. And then things begin to change. So he encounters a Samaritan woman at the well in the heat of the day, which few people come to draw water at that hour, even if it is from Jacob's well. Now, Jacob was both a beloved ancestor of the Jews and the Samaritans, but apparently he wasn't beloved enough to end the feud between them. They had enough history where they just decided they just weren't gonna mess with each other. Jews and Samaritans didn't get along, and women and men in this culture generally kept a safe social distance from each other without a pandemic. But Jesus, when he sees this woman come to the well, he ignores the boundaries that their people have created with one another. And Jesus says to her, "Give me a drink." Now, she may have thought to herself in that moment, "He must be new around here asking me for a drink." His disciples, remember, they had gone to town to buy food, and so there was nobody there really to pull his coattail. You know how we do. We give each other that look. We're like, don't do that, So the Samaritan woman says to Jesus, "How can you, a Jew, ask me, a Samaritan woman, for a drink? For Jews use nothing in common with Samaritans," the scripture tells us. So they generally had real beef with each other. But I love how savvy she is. She doesn't roll her eyes or ignore him. She remains curious about why he would see her worthy to share a drink with him, given their adversarial history. But you see, that is who Jesus is. Jesus can see us, all of us. When life beats up on us, he knows exactly how to reach in to us. So Jesus, by asking that question, he piques her curiosity. Who is this person, she must be thinking, who is seeing me differently than my community sees me? Some scholars say that she came to the well at the hottest point to avoid the other women and people who would come to draw water there. Because like all of us, she had a past. And to no fault of her own, she constantly was fighting the judgments and the assumptions that people were making about her. Maybe she was prepared to expect Jesus to judge her too. You see, she's not very different from us. We often carry around in the back of our heads an expectation that God is going to judge us for our mistakes. But that's not what happens here. God isn't looking to judge her. Jesus is looking to love her, to see her, to empower her. And that's exactly what he does. Jesus answers her resistance and he says, "If you knew the gift of God and who was saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him and he would have given you living water." So he offers her living water and it confuses her. She's intrigued. And so she asks Jesus about this miraculous water. And he invites her to call for her husband. And when she replies that she doesn't have a husband, he agrees and he says, "You've had five husbands and the one you have now is not your husband." Now, the misogyny in theological tradition, theological traditional preaching, tends to take a pin in that response and brand her a loose woman, as women are often labeled. But the truth is, life has taught us that we don't actually shuffle through five husbands and relationships without some struggle, without some pain, without some joy, without some heartache, and without sometimes some regret. I think about my grandmother. My grandmother was married five times. She had five husbands. One husband was killed riding a mule. Another husband shot her in her chest and almost left her for dead. Another husband died of cancer. And another husband died because he was chronically ill. And so on. But if you only look at the numbers of times that she was married, you would miss the suffering, the joy, the pain, the journey that she endured. Throughout her life's journey and this woman at the well's journey, they made it through simply by learning to lean on God. And so Jesus, at no point, although the theologians would like to problematize her, notice that Jesus at no point invites her to repentance, or for that matter, speaks of sin at all. She very easily could have been a widow or have been abandoned or divorced. So immediately after Jesus describes her past, she says, "I see that you are a prophet." And she asked him where one should worship. Now, I love this exchange between her and Jesus. She helps us to know that she's a woman of faith in God, because she and Jesus begin to banter back and forth, and she talks about the mountain that she worships on and the mountain that his people worship on, and she wants Jesus to know that they may not worship in the same place, but she doesn't see her worship of God as inferior to where anybody else worships. She understands that God can be found everywhere, in every tradition, in every heart. She is not backing up from it at all. When scholars attempt to problematize her because Jesus says, "You have five husbands and the one that you have is now not your husband," they get us to try to think the worst about her. And it's the worst simply because of runaway gossip. Anybody ever been the target of runaway gossip? So we don't even really know anything about the man who was living with her, who was not her husband. It could have been her uncle, could have been her brother. But if we can imagine another scenario, then she looks different. Her story looks different. To see in the scriptures is often connected with belief. When the woman says, "I see you are a prophet," she makes a confession of faith. Jesus has seen her. And she has seen him for who he is. It reminds me of a song by James Fortune, who's a gospel singer, who wrote a song that says, "I'll trust you." Jesus and this Samaritan woman began a journey of trusting each other. They saw more in each other. She trusted him with her humanity, her vulnerability. She found that vulnerability was strength. And he trusted that she was more than what people said about her. Thought about her. He knew who she really was. His love, like it does us, liberated her. She takes risks with him to be vulnerable, to lay bare her struggles, to cross lines of pain and hurt. When she crosses those lines and trusts him, she discovers what we discover when we trust Jesus. And when we trust God with our story, with our past, our pain, our histories, our heart. She teaches us how to surrender whatever painful thoughts we carry that make God seem so far away, to simply know that God is right here. Can you feel him? She models for us how to work through tears, pain, heartache, and rain that sometimes pour in our lives and keep on trusting. I appreciate her story. Because despite my parents' positive affirmations for me as a young woman, I struggled with the world's message often sent to girls and women to stay back, to play yourself small, to doubt yourself, to only exist in the background of life. And as a result, I developed low self-esteem. I saw every failure, every mistake as a commentary on my worth and my value in the world. I didn't always trust my thoughts. I struggled with confidence. And I had come to believe that everyone else was better than me. Do I have any witnesses out there? Until one day I had an encounter with Jesus, who empowered me. He showed me my past, and he said to me, "I still call you to do more." And I believe that he is continuing to say that to women and girls in the world. Jesus reminded me through the scriptures that you are the apple of my eye. Don't you know that I love you with an everlasting love? Are you going to believe the messages in the world about you, or are you going to believe me? And that day, he gave me this living water, and my life hasn't been the same since. You see, this woman was no different from us. There was enough in her life to tempt her away from believing in God, but she held on until she was set free to be the evangelist that she was always meant to be. You know, we have a phrase we often say, hurt people, but you know what? Free people too. She had a story to tell, and she left her water jar to go tell it. Her story after encountering Jesus transformed her life and her whole community. Jesus didn't just focus on her past. He focused on the future he saw in her for greatness. That's what he does for all of us. Jesus didn't just erase broken boundaries for her, but for a whole community that needed living water. If there was ever a time we need living water today, it is now. Through this one empowered woman, historical animosity, conflict, violence, and division was washed away. A whole community stepped forward at her words, "Come and see a man who told me everything about myself. He saw me, he saw my hopes, my aspirations, my dreams, my essence, my capability, my potential to change the world, and he set me free." So today, in honor of Women's History Month, I celebrate this empowered, liberated, wise Samaritan woman who actually did change her world. She ran those in her world and in her village right into the arms and into the heart of Jesus. And so if one empowered woman can change a whole village, imagine what a 600 million empowered girls and women can do with the world. So perhaps, my friends, Beyoncé was onto something when she asked the question, "Who runs the world?"